Welcome back to Film Vloggers. We review films and flog dead horses, so you don't have to. Is this week's film choice a complete waste of your viewing time? Much like flogging slash beating a dead horses, get it? Please head over to www.filmvloggers.com to check out all of our previous vloggings. And while you're there, maybe hang out for a while, look around and vote for our next film. Click on vote, or visit www.filmvloggers.com/vote. Are you an idiot? If so, please check out our idiot's guide to reviewing us, where even a big dummy like you can leave us a red-hot review. Here at Film Vloggers, we pride ourselves on offering one-star content with five-star effort. Once on the website, please click on Idiot's Guide, or visit us at www.filmvloggers.com/review-us. That should have been Idiot's Guide. My fault, I didn't change the URL. Annoying. Once again, filmvloggers.com/review-us. Believe it or not, we now have a Patreon. I know what you're thinking. You have the audacity to ask us to pay to receive more of this. Pause for dramatic effect. Yes. We have a Patreon exclusive show called Nitpickers. I think you'll like it. Please visit www.filmvloggers.com/support-us. Again, that hyphen is annoying, should have removed it. Or head straight to our Patreon page. patreon.com/filmwafflers. No idea why I did film wafflers. Another mistake. Where you can support us for as little as £1 British or £1.50. And while you're on the website, punch that big purple subscribe button and tell a friend about the vlog. Wife, husband, boyfriend, girlfriend, partner, mistress, your nan, granddad, your kids. They can tell their friends. They can tell their friends at school about the vlog. But in all seriousness, this really helps the podcast grow and enables us to enrich or ruin the lives of the hundreds of millions of earlobes we haven't reached yet.
Hi, Ben here. I would suggest, if you can, before listening to this episode, give our recent episode Chit Chat a quick listen. Just because it explains why you're about to hear some very dubious sound quality. If this is the first episode you listen to, then it does get ahead of a lot better in terms of sound quality and the quality of chat, hopefully. So yes, do bear with us on these episodes. So try and enjoy the best you can. And if it's too unbearable, just turn it off and go listen to some of our Halloween stuff. Overall, that sounds pretty okay. You do get the occasional episode with me and Fiona where you can hear her speaking on the Klim microphone. Again, that is all explained in the Chit Chat episode, so go have a look at that. Thanks again for listening. Enjoy Kevin Bacon.
Cheers.
In terms of our podcast so far with the Bacon series, you know, we've had the 80s heartthrob Bacon dancing around in Footloose. We've had the 90s cowboy Bacon in Tremors. And now I've got the noughties Bacon with Hollow Man and Bacon increasingly looking like he's made of plastic. Just a very strange look for Bacon in this. But yeah, I mean,
I think, as you said, he's kind of gone through it. It's sort of an evolution, hasn't he? In the 80s, lovable, young, heartthrob, Tremors. He's a bit sleazy, but it's sort of funny. He means well. I think for me, this has to be Bacon. And the beauty of it, I think, is the fact that you're only actually really getting about 25 minutes of actual screen time with Bacon.
Yeah, before his real face is replaced with the rubber mask, which we'll go into.
Every sort of form of the Hollow Man that you see throughout the film, you still know that's Bacon.
I mean, even when he's full on invisible, you know there's a Bacon in the room. I think it's interesting the fact that his career, his roles are just getting progressively darker. I mean, he's done this Hollow Man in the noughties with Verhoeven. And by 2006, he's playing a full-blown child sex offender in The Woodsman. That they're starting in the noughties to really capitalise on Bacon's strangeness.
The seedy and the dangerous.
The unhinged Bacon, indeed, yeah. Yes, so I think really, should we kick things off with just a very brief character mention? Shall I just go through? I mean, to be honest, there's only about six characters here that I think are worth mentioning, because the majority of the film takes place in the science lab with just the core group. So we've got Elizabeth Shue playing Linda, but we've got Kevin Bacon playing Sebastian Kane, Josh Brolin as Matt. We've got Sarah, who's the ginger girl, the sort of science assistant, you know, the animal carer or whatever she's doing in this. I recognised her from was Deadwood. We've got Carter, who at this stage I'm just mentioning character names as opposed to actors because I don't actually know anything about the actors. Who's the kind of, I actually don't know what this guy's set up as. He spends most of the film walking around the lab with a pair of headphones around his neck.
I know him mainly from TV series Heroes.
Yes. A bit of a slob in this. I mean, again, this is meant to be a high, you know, some of the most high profile science team potentially in the country, and we've got Carter walking around with the headphones on, just looking at pornography in numerous scenes.
Yeah, well, what's his role? Is he the medic?
I think he's more a technician. I think that's what I thought. And then we've got Sarah as the ginger girl. We've got Carter as the slob. We've got Frank and Janice, who spend most of the time in the Overwatch Tower, keeping an eye on, you know, vitals and all this sort of stuff. So they're the kind of secondary parts. They're just the other team. They're effectively just pinballs for Bacon to start pillaging in the last act. But yeah, I mean, they're your main characters listed out there.
I'd say a quick note on Frank, just his hair. I know for me, and I know for potentially yourself, with some curly hair, that if I let my hair grow out, that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with some curly bouffant.
Well, it's a sort of mullet, isn't it? Because it's as thick around the neck area as it is on top of the head. So it's just overall a pretty unhygienic look, which I wouldn't.
I think it reminds you when I did grow my hair back when I was 18, 19, it was a catastrophe. So I think Frank has just reminded me to probably avoid
that. I think that's probably fair enough. Yeah, I mean, every time we see her in this, she's removing clothing. We get some very early warning signs that Bacon is of not sound mind. I mean, it gets progressively worse.
So he's got a big sort of, you know, grin on his face, and then you just kind of get, she just closes the blinds, and it's just like, damn it.
Yeah. And we get the first of two scenes of Bacon whizzing along the highway in his convertible Porsche. With, as we were saying before, well, I mean, I called it rock music, but you were saying it's more a sort of rock power ballad.
Is it? It's not really singular.
No.
It's like a rock, you know, as you said, like a rock ballad. Like Bacon's getting
quite involved.
He's getting into that.
Yeah.
Maybe this is based on the fact that Bacon is, as he told Shu on the Skype call, he's kind of running on caffeine and Twinkies. Mm. That's kind of his fuel.
I think he's absolutely beside himself with this discovery, and yeah, you know, he's really banging the head to the rock music on the stereo, which is, for anyone who's interested, it's actually a track called Power Struggle by Sunna, is what Bacon's listening to, and he's really pounding that dashboard. He's enjoying himself very much. And what do we have? We have the...
My biggest takeaway from this, which can only be described as Bacon wearing like a leather dressing gown.
Yeah, he's a man in black, isn't he? He's got the black chinos. He's got a black shirt on. And yeah, he seems to have an overcoat, a leather overcoat.
Like an ankle length leather dressing gown. You know, and he's just on top of the world.
On top of the world. He's spinning his keys on his finger. I mean, he's literally high-fiving with the guards. Fun fact, the gorilla, the actual non-invisible gorilla, was played by a man in an ape suit, a gorilla suit.
Yeah, there was a couple of bits there where it sort of felt like a homage to Alien.
Yes.
You know, Ridley Scott's Alien. And, well, probably Aliens as well, to be fair. You know, there are certain bits. You know, it doesn't, no knocking it, it doesn't look bad as such, but there are bits where you can clearly see, you know, a man running around in a leather alien suit.
But we do actually. I mean, we need to be careful here, because we always complain whenever effects aren't done practically when they could be. So even if it does look slightly, you know, a man in a mask.
It had an Oscar nomination, believe it or not, for visual effects.
And it lost to Gladiator. And at the same time, you know, a film like Gladiator has a lot more mass appeal than this.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, Hollow Man's never going to watch effects. There's no way.
You know, it's got a very narrow window of appeal, I'd say.
You know, basically, you're giving it Verhoeven an Oscar for showing some you know, some muscle chode Bacon. You know, it's just not going to happen, is it?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it's at this stage where we get Carter, who gives out a very effeminate woohoo. I mean, I don't think we actually see it actually coming from his lips, but we just hear a woohoo and then a yeah, baby, followed swiftly by the yeah, baby.
Right. So you got a bit of Austin Powers.
Yeah, we've got Austin Powers. We have Carter woohooing, and then we've got Austin Powers just coming down just to have a look. So that was good. The camera is panning in on this dinner table to introduce the scene. I don't know if you notice this, but Elizabeth Shue is in fact eating from Matt's plate.
Extra toast for you, Matt, if you know what I mean.
Well, she's just enjoyed his main course. So that doesn't surprise me. You know, she's basically making her way around the lab. You know, I'm assuming if they held out long enough, it would be old Carter getting the go next.
Frank would, you know, would get in there at some point. You know, maybe we could get back to what it was before and all this kind of stuff.
I think it's one of the first times where you really see how how provocative Elizabeth Shue is in this, in that, you know, she goes out to see him, drapes herself over a sort of railing. And every time she speaks to Bacon, it's kind of breathy. The way she speaks is quite breathy.
Well, so this is the thing with Shue, is that every encounter she has with Bacon throughout the film, before and after he becomes Hollow Man, is, and however ridiculous it is, sorry, Sebastian, please, I've got a boyfriend, and this is ludicrous. You know, we've had our time. It didn't work out. No thanks. She's always kind of just letting Bacon basically like for a good few seconds, and then going, oh God, you know, oh, come on now.
But she doesn't even say, come on now. She'll leave it with a sort of, you know, yeah, we've already been here, Bacon. You know, haven't you ever thought about making love to an invisible man? There wouldn't be any difference. You were never there. He gets a little bit sort of a bit nostalgic and sort of goes, well, you know, why can't we have another go? You know, I thought we were great together. And she's going, you know, well, you were great, Bacon. I was just standing in your way, you know, and all this stuff. So there's a real side to Shue in this where she's really fanning the flames of Bacon's infatuation and his madness.
It's not good. Like the acting is just, it's so bad.
But yeah, Leaving Las Vegas was good. I mean, she was good in that. I saw that not too long ago, and you've got, I think it's admirable whenever you see an actor acting alongside a performance like Nick Cage in Leaving Las Vegas, who manages to kind of doesn't in any way upstage him because he is the focal point of that film, but does a very good job.
I think it's just admirable, just acting along Nick Cage in anything, isn't it? To be honest, just keep up with Nick Cage's energy must be quite
absolutely,
a challenge.
Yeah, especially a sort of pissed up Cage, totally reckless Cage. Yeah, the costume choice here is really quite well. It's vomit. You could say it's vomit inducing. He comes out, I mean, he's strutting from the Pentagon looking like literally a cartoon character. You know, he's got the shirt-tie combo on, and he's got Shue and Matt standing going like, you know, what are you doing? We'll never work again. And they probe him so far that he ends up sort of snappy and going, it's my dream, it's my vision. Again, a demonstration that, you know, this guy's not of sound mind, but he's becoming increasingly protective over the project.
Come on now, stop mucking about, Shue. Just get it. She just hops in the back seat, right, fine. Matt hops in the front, so he's like, come on. Yeah. Then you get. And then he obviously speeds off, you know, showing, he's got the Porsche showing off. And then you just kind of get this fucking thing where Shue just sticks the arms in there going like,
yeah, maybe she was inspired by Carter early on, but she does, doesn't she? She woohoos when they're driving off.
This is the start of Bacon losing his mind. In actually now a proper dressing gown. So the leather's been ditched, purple's been ditched, and he's just got a dressing gown on.
The salient points are that it's a joke about Superman looking down on Wonder Woman on the Justice League. Well, let me start that. So what is it?
It's the plane, isn't it? Yeah.
Superman is looking down on Wonder Woman sunbathing on the Justice League roof. And, you know, as Bacon says himself, he wants to go down and get him some of that Wonder Pussy. So he swoops down really fast. Fucks her so fast, she doesn't know what's going on. He flies off. She gets up and says, what the fuck was that? And the invisible man says, I don't know, but my asshole is killing me. to which that's supposedly the punchline. But
yeah, they don't really find it.
No, it goes down just about how it's gone down just then. It's a joke that maybe sounds better in the head than it does on actual delivery.
Yeah, so, you know, again, you know, yeah, like just completely on board. You know, I think they did build a complete, you know, anatomy of Bacon from head to toe. And it's, well, yeah, I just think it's unbelievable. Yeah, I remember when I first saw it years ago that I was, you know, going like, yeah, that was, you know, that looked pretty good. And I was quite concerned when we went to rewatch it that it wasn't going to hold up, and I was going to be like, oh God, you know, it just looks like fucking dog shit now. Yeah, it's really, you know, it's not stood the test of time. But yeah, you know, blown away again. Probably your first real snippet of some Bacon code.
You saw sort of a muscle outline of Bacon's cock, don't you, flapping around.
Yeah, it's flopping all over the shop, yeah.
Well, I mean, fair enough, Bacon. You know, it takes balls, but
I think Carter's the one who puts the thermals on.
No, it's Frank. No, it's because
it's Frank, right?
Around
the
group, and he's going like, hello, oh. And he's like, you know, one minute he's up on the towel, the next minute he's behind, you know, old Linda. And Frank sort of rolls the eyes and goes, right, don't worry, guys, I'll get him. And he puts the thermals on, and then, of course, we get the thermal image, and we just see Bacon hiding behind some monitors, sort of crouching behind the monitors. Yeah. And Frank goes, got your chief or something. And Bacon sort of comes again, you're still in the thermal, and he comes strutting out, and he just goes like, you guys are no fun. Like, what's his hand in like a dismissive way? But another bit that I was going to mention was whenever he first comes to post-op and Shoes sort of watching over him and asleep on the chair. And because Bacon doesn't have eyelids, the light actually seems to really irritate his eyes. And he wakes up going like, turn off the goddamn lights. But we have this bit, which is, you know, probably one of my favorite scenes, where on the first night post becoming invisible, Sarah's left in the watchtower to watch over him on the thermal camera, which allows her to keep track of him through the night. And she falls asleep. Bacon, you know, it's pretty early. It's early doors, isn't it? He's only been invisible for 5 or 6 hours, but he's already really displayed some truly strange behavior. He gets out of bed and we see the camera is panning in on Sarah, and we just see her. We see something ruffling her hair, and then we see her blouse become unbuttoned. We then see one of her breasts pop out, and we can see that the breast being like compressed and nipples actually getting pulled. You know, again, I wonder how they did. You know, I don't know whether that was a green suit.
It's good stuff.
You know, I know how to fondle a breast.
Yeah.
Which they've then edited his hand out later on, or perhaps you even the whole breast more, is CGI.
I think the breast is CGI. Yeah, yeah.
Do you think it's a CGI breast? Really?
I think so. Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I thought it was more likely that someone is actually doing that and the hand's being edited out.
Well, that's the beauty. Isn't
yeah,
it? it's so well done. It's
you
so
just
well
don't done. Know where you are.
You're just not quite sure how they've done it. You've just gone like, how the heck has Verhoeven pulled that off?
That's right. But of course, through all this tugging of the breast, she then wakes up and goes, you know, oh. And does she call out? I think she actually calls out, sort of goes, you know, Sebastian.
When he first enters and she's kind of like napping, I think he even kind of goes like, you know, well, what's her name? Sarah.
Sarah, yeah.
Sarah. There's some more kind of Bacon whispering. Sarah.
Yeah. I can quite imagine that from his behavior earlier on when he's hiding behind the monitor. But he does this, and then she wakes up and goes, you know, Sebastian, and she's looking around the room concerned, you know, checking the corners. And you just see over her shoulder the monitor, which is monitoring Bacon in bed, and you just see him scampering back into bed in the thermal light, and just sort of scampers back to bed, throws a sheet over and puts his hand behind his head. What I'm going to say really cracks me up about that is the fact that he must have really bolted down those corridors to get back into that bed in good time. He's literally fondled some breast and then sprinted back to bed.
how far is that room away from that control hub?
I think it's on the other side of the compound.
Yeah, the thing is, she gets up, you know, she jumped up and she's going, yeah. Sebastian, hello?
Yeah.
So straight away, she knows maybe something's happened. She calls out Sebastian. She looks around the room. Well, obviously, you can't see him.
No.
He's there.
Right.
She kind of walks past the monitor,
yeah,
which then gives him enough time to get into bed. And then when she looks at him, he's just got into bed and he's just got the arms behind the head. If she just looks straight at the monitor, Bacon's in trouble because he's still scuttling back.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, I think he's really, I mean, he's done a Mo Farah job back to that bedspread. But it really is just an absolutely ridiculous scene. And it just confirms the fact that, you know, yeah, 10 days down the line, he's starting to lose his head a bit. And that's when he goes full turbo. But 4 hours in, he's literally scampering around that compound, feeling up the other scientists. I mean, it's really quite extraordinary. But I think you wanted to say, because there's this bit about when he starts moving Elizabeth Shue's Coke can around.
We get another scene, don't we, with Elizabeth when she's just there typing away. And then, again, rascal. Starts moving the Coke can around. At first, she doesn't notice. And she goes, oh, Sebastian, are you here?
Oh, you got me.
Well, unfortunately, I wish he did say that. You know, I think it would be better if Bacon just sort of adopted this, you know.
Oh, you got me again.
But he does.
It's not far off, to be fair.
It's not far off, but he gives a slightly sinister, you know, you have no fun how the, no, you have no idea how much fun this is. Also, that's the line.
Yeah. She hangs about. There's some kissing. You know, there's you know there's the touch of the shoulder.
Well, you're waiting get for her to put a small piece in her mouth. You know,
so she gets up and she doesn't get up and go like, "Oh my God, Sebastian,
yeah,
get off!"
Well, she goes, "No, nothing would change. You were never there." In that breathy voice, it, you know, it's. I mean, she's really egging him on at this stage. I mean, if it was anyone else, you know, you've got an invisible man prancing around the fortress. And you'd say, you can't be going around doing that, mate. You need to be getting that lab coat on so we can see where you are. You need to start wearing a t-shirt around the facility. Bear in mind, whenever he's totally invisible, he's literally walking around stark naked. You know, he's literally cock and ballsing down those corridors.
He's walking around fully erect.
Yeah. So, well, you wouldn't know. You don't know. Yeah, Bacon is literally coming into the room penis first. So yeah, this is really when things are starting to, you know, the wheels are well and truly falling off for Bacon at this stage. The quote from Matt, whenever the rubber mask is made, Matt, you can actually hear him saying, if you ask me, it's an improvement. You made that comment, I think, when we were doing the Tremors. I think you said that the rubber mask actually suited Bacon's face quite nicely.
Right then, when he's blowing up the lab and he's basically making his escape. He's put the wig on, he's got the glasses on, and it's like, well, yeah. If he went upstairs now to the security guy, they'd be like, oh, how you doing? You're right.
Yeah, you're right.
Hey, God, you're looking fresh there, Bacon.
There's a curious moment where just before he leaves the lab, he's seen rushing to the toilet to vomit, and the vomit itself is invisible, which is, I mean, I'm not going to start nitpicking around the invisibility thing, but surely it's made his body invisible. So, like, given that these are things that he's then putting into his food that he's eating, how's that getting turned invisible?
I'm not quite sure the rules. No, like, you know, so feasibly Bacon, if he wanted to, could just be leaving like invisible blowouts all over the room.
Well, the point is that I guess from a creative decision, from the director's point of view, if you were to have just an invisible man, but all you could see were a couple of logs in a large intestine and a stomach full of food, it probably would slightly ruin the image.
His eyelids are see-through. That's why he goes like, oh, God, turn the lights off!
Turn the lights off!
So he has that. So I'm not a scientist, but I'm pretty sure if his eyelids are invisible, the light passing through his eyeables, his retinas,
he wouldn't be able to see.
There won't be any absorption.
No. Correct. I think the point is, the moment you start questioning the invisibility physics, I think you start really losing track of what
you've got to accept it for what it is. You know, overall, just based on the CGI, like, I'm completely on board. You know, Bacon can do whatever he wants, you know.
Bacon can be laying down a whole heap of turd mines all over the lab.
Yeah, you've got that. You've got some Bacon Cho just flapping around.
Yeah.
And I'm there. So they can do whatever they want. I'm fine. I'm fine with it.
So it's at this stage he decides he's got to get out of the office of the lab, and he walks in to tell old Carter that he's off out. Of course, at this stage we see Carter is caught with he's caught short looking at some pornography in the watchtower, and he's not only looking at it, but he's also commenting, which is a curious thing to be doing while looking at porn. He's literally sitting there going, "Oh, I'd suck those titties right off you," which I mean, I like to think I've never been caught doing anything, saying anything like that. But you know, fair enough. It just again calls into question, who is this guy? And why has he found himself into this group?
I'm not sure what everyone else's porn habits are, but, you know, if generally people, I'm guessing, watch porn by themselves.
Yeah.
But the fact is, he's not only doing that, but he's doing it I know he's technically by himself.
He's at work.
Yeah, he's at work. Anyone could walk in at any time. You've got Bacon just doing whatever he wants.
Well, Bacon
he could be literally behind
Bacon
him.
Bacon be over his shoulder having a wank at this stage.
I think it just kind of just sums up his character, doesn't it?
Yeah.
He's just a bit of just like a slob, isn't it?
Carter is just the biggest question mark in this film, really. I don't know who he is and how he's somehow got security clearance.
It's supposed to be like a crack team of experts in their own field.
Like geniuses, yeah.
Well, yeah, like I haven't seen any
expertise
from anyone
shown from Carter.
But, you know, again, he put some fucking God knows what on the radio.
That in fact is a track by Skunk Anansi, and the track is called Charlie Big Potato. So
right, yeah,
the Bacon's listening to some Charlie Big Potato.
Charlie Big Potato.
When he's in his apartment, spies the same woman from the beginning, who yet again is taking a kit off. I think.
He's become like a voyeur, isn't he? That's kind of the only way that you can do it, I think, effectively. So it makes sense, but it's very much down that theme, isn't it? Like it's all kind of, especially the sexual stuff anyway, is very much from his point of view.
We get some more canoodling and, you know, some more sexy time and frolicking from Linda and Matt in a minute. Going back briefly, I completely forgot to mention that the first sex scene we see, some of the stuff that Linda's coming out with.
Chatting about, you know, what's going on, you know, how's it going to work out, you know, is Sebastian okay, you know, do we need to be worried, you know, there's some lines that just
Oh yeah.
But there's something to do with falling off the map, or, you know, while she's going under the covers, she says something about, oh, you know, I just like, you know, seeing what's off the map, exploring what's not on the map.
Yeah.
But she comes back up for air. What about Sebastian? You know, like, you know, realistically, on paper, he's just better than me. How did it not work out? You know, do I match up to Bacon? I think Brolin enters. You're just a better fit. Ugh.
Oh, Christ. I don't actually remember. Is that what she said?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. I don't actually remember that stuff.
Yeah, when it goes in, that's just, she drops that.
I mean, she really is, without sounding like a total prude, like, she is really just totally revolting, isn't she?
She's just a sex fiend. You can't take her seriously. Like, the acting is wooden at best.
She's lied to everyone and told them all that they've got this clearance for the human testing. She's led them all down by through deceit, through this thing where Bacon then becomes invisible. I don't know what I'm talking about there.
Oh, God.
Hey, you know, you've got to understand. You know. Right, turn it off. We've had enough. Well, we've effectively got a smoke Bacon followed by an aqua Bacon. Yeah, I can quite imagine this wasn't a particularly enjoyable experience for Bacon, because he does spend, you know, 2/3 of the film invisible in a series of coloured suit. He throws the man, so the man is smoking, enjoying the pipe, fair enough, before he makes the big phone call. And then he throws him in the pool and drowns him. And he's sort of splashing around. Of course, it doesn't look like anyone's in the pool with him. And he's calling out to his wife, you know, Linda, or whatever she's called. Not Linda, that's the machine, whatever she's called. And of course, when she looks out the window, it's just her husband splashing around the pool. But of course, we know Bacon is in fact there, pulling him underneath.
His wife's obviously not in any rush. I know it's like maybe a three-story house, but she kind of looks out the window. He's thrashing around. I'm assuming he can swim. He can.
Oh, no, but to be fair, she does exclaim. I mean, I think he's called Howard or something. She does go like, Howard!
She seems like she's aware that there's something, you know, it's not too good down there. Whatever's going on. Howard, he's drowning for whatever reason. You know, Bacon's, I don't think he's that swift with it. I think he takes a bit of time. He could probably do a couple of lengths and then get out.
Well, you see him, don't you, getting out of the pool and then literally scampering out of that back gate with the water leaking off him.
Again, I'm not sure if that's another suit getting out of the pool or not, but, you know, again, like, you know, as I've made clear, the effects,
effects. I'm
on board.
I would say that I think probably my favourite effect in this film is that swimming pool scene. There's also a scene earlier on which is a similar effect where he splashes water on his face post-rape scene, which I think the water coming off his face is probably the most memorable effect for me. But back at the facility, Shu and the rest of the team confront Bacon and say, you know, you went out. Oh, I think she actually says something like, we all know you went out, and he goes, oh, I just went around to my apartment to pick up some stuff. And Shu goes, I think you did a lot more than pick up some stuff, because she sees the mask and all this. And Bacon goes, look, it's my experiment, you know, screw you all. If I want to go out, I'll go out. And Shu threatens him and goes, again, sort of whispers seductively in front of everyone else, goes, I'll tell you, I'll go straight to the committee. Again, just some strange stuff. Some further flirtation from Bacon as things are becoming increasingly uneasy.
So they all get together, don't they? The thermal's on. They got the tranquilizer guns. Janice forgets her goggles, or she forgets something. There's not that big a gap. You know, it's probably about less than 10 seconds of them walking out, turning left, going down the corridor to start the hunt for Bacon. Janice forgets whatever, goes back in, thermal's on, and then you just see Bacon going like, ugh!
I mean, Bacon is effectively, he must have been hovering outside those double doors throughout this whole scene and basically sort of dived out the way of the other guys when they came out.
I assume that they've not all got their thermals on, because surely if Bacon's just hanging outside that door, they'd have walked out the door and gone like, oh, found him. There he is.
Yeah. I'd say this, I think you were talking earlier on about the alien comparison. I mean, this is real alien stuff, because they've got the tracker and, you know, you've got Linda and co guiding Matt and Carter as to where Dot is on this monitor. So they're kind of saying, oh, you know, he's just around the corner.
Then we get some spider Bacon. So Matt walks past, and, like, you know, he thinks he's found him, because he thinks, yeah, Bacon's just hiding behind this fucking pole. There he
is.
Shoots him. Oh, wait, it's not. It's not Bacon.
Not Bacon.
It's just the steam coming up.
And it's going to be a showdown between Matt and Bacon, because Bacon's coming towards Matt, who's standing on the other side of these doors that have closed. And because the room is now filling up with steam, and I think Bacon's turned the heating on or something, he's had a go at the central heating. Well, he's trying to track him with the thermal goggles, but of course, as the room's becoming the same temperature as Bacon's body, you know, he's sitting there and he's sort of going, you know, I'm losing him. I'm losing, losing resolution.
You get a bit of bacon polo, apparently. As we said, he's, you know, he's a rascal, isn't he?
I mean, given this whole plan is effectively a circle, Shu having closed the door and effectively trapped him in, Frank and Sarah then basically come round the other side and go exactly where Shu has just rescued Matt just then. So now they're effectively in the same room as Bacon. They're trying to stop the blood flow from Carter's neck. And I think Sarah runs off to go and get some blood and leaves Frank sort of holding, putting pressure on the wound. Now, this entire stuff about she's going to go and get some blood for him. I mean, is she just planning to administer a blood pack to this bloke on the floor?
Well, she goes and is it what, six packs of blood? She's on her way on her way to Carter with.
What was she going to do with those blood packs?
It looks like just throw it on him. Yeah. And just hope for the best,
or just have him drink it or something. I don't know.
Basically, what she ends up doing with it, just throwing it on the floor and just kind of hopes that he just picks up enough.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand what a grand plan was. Of course, she's left Frank at this stage, left him just quivering with the curly hair. We see Bacon's hair soaked in the blood, which is quite a good effect.
Yeah, he's kind of got the more of like a semi sort of curtain look. When the blood goes on, it really sort of just, you know, really emphasizes the tips of that curtain.
I always admired your feistiness.
I remember Frank kind of goes, you know, they're like, oh, where's Sarah? You know, why'd you split up? What's going on? Oh, you know, he was going to die. Checks his pulse and just goes, he's dead.
He's dead. Which is, you know, a surprise because the bloke is literally lying there, blood all over the floor, and his neck is literally hanging off. You know, they declare the time of death and that's it. And then they all make their way back into the room that Sarah's just been in and see all the blood on the floor and then find Sarah in the freezer.
Ends up stabbing Frank. Buffon Frank's gone with a crowbar.
He puts a full crowbar through Frank's back.
Poor Frank. So he's gone.
Frank was standing there at the entrance of the freezer, spraying the fire extinguisher around, and kind of looks around and goes, "Is Sarah okay?" Well, can I just address this look that he has? This, because he's improved the look, because before it was just the sunglasses and the cap and the mask, but now I think, as he said earlier, he's now got a sort of wig on. And he does kind of look a bit like a plastic sort of Michael Moore at this stage. Where's the hair coming from? Where's that?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I don't know if I just sort of just momentarily just switched off. All I remember is him just, you know, making the bomb. He's putting all this stuff in. He's testing it out, going like, oh yeah, that's going to work.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, he's in front of the mirror and he's just got the curtain wig on. It's like, oh.
Yeah, he's got like an exact replica of his own hair.
He's got the curtain wig on. He's got a hat on. The glasses are still there. The mask is back on. And yeah, well, you know, it pretty much just looks like Bacon.
Yeah, it's very strange. I'm not entirely sure what that was all about.
We're just catching the last glimpse of the new Bacon. Looking good.
You think you're God? I'll show you God! Or something.
Oh, that's all right, yeah.
She starts fucking absolutely exploding him with the flames. Well, the one thing, he's kind of scampering down the corridor looking back, going like, oh.
Sprinklers go on. You get the similar effects from the swimming pool. He's behind again. Yeah, just looking just fantastic.
Yeah, looking good.
About to, you know, lay a blow on Linda, and then here he is. Matt's recovered from that, you know, that gash.
Yeah, and it's basically been partially frozen. So Matt's defrosted. There's a couple of things I think, which is, you know, the Matt and Linda commit the classic, you know, showdown error. In that they have about two or three different opportunities to finish Bacon, but never do. So the first is that Matt comes and hits Bacon over the head with a crowbar and then starts, you know, shuffling his way along the corridor with Shu to try and get them out in time. Of course, he's only delivered one single blow to Bacon's head. He doesn't finish him off. So Bacon then resurrects.
It's Mike Myers again, isn't it?
Yeah, it's total Mike Myers.
He's hit Bacon. He's knocked him out. He leaves his weapon there. Yeah, so his weapon's left there. They kind of limp off. He gets back up. He tries again. He gets electrocuted. And then some of his body's partially shown again. You get a bit of flesh and you get a bit of muscle. Like, yeah again, I'm not quite sure of the rules of Hollow Man, but I'm guessing that's just one of them.
Yeah, quite.
I don't really.
Well, it's, you know, it's no longer got his clothes. They've been burnt off. The water's stopped. So the only way, I mean, he's not going to put his rubber mask on again. So the only way for him to actually be visible for this last final showdown is if they find some way of having him become partially visible. So yeah, his muscular layers appear to become visible after being electrocuted. I'm not sure.
We've got some crispy bacon.
Yeah, well, some bacon, you'd say.
Smoky bacon,
yeah. The final showdown on top of the elevator.
You know he's going to come back for one last hurrah, and they're like in every horror film, in every slasher film, and in every film known to man. You know the bad guy's going to come back for one last bang, one last go.
And then she, of course, you know, being Shu and being always up for it, always gagging for it, she sort of says, "Go to hell," and sort of holds his arm out, going, you know, "No." It's not a very dignified end for Bacon, who throughout has been, you know, by far the most intelligent, snappy character. He's sort of reduced to a going down an elevator shaft with no kit on. But that's pretty much it.
Well, wait, Hollow Man,
that's it, that they escape and they're picked up by the emergency services.
As I've made abundantly clear, you know, I think the CGI is top-notch. Travesty that it didn't beat Gladiator to visual effects. But as we said, it's never gonna beat Gladiator in Ridley Scott, Russell Crowe. It had no chance, basically, so fine, fair enough.
Do you think there's a chance that, say, it came out in the 80s? Because a lot of it, as we've mentioned, is quite campy. Do you think if some of the special effects weren't as good and as cutting edge, to the point where you were fully aware that it really wasn't even trying to take itself seriously, and it was all a bit more campy and a bit more trashy looking, do you think that would in some way improve its, like, widen its appeal in some way?
It just depends how much of a hit those special effects would have taken. It's losing its only saving grace, its only redeeming feature, pretty much.
I was going to say, with Verhoeven, he's obviously a very eccentric bloke, and the way he makes films could only have been made by Paul Verhoeven. And with this, I feel, unlike the last five films he made, you know, RoboCop, Recall, Basic Instinct, Showgirls, the whole film was fairly against the grain, and it wasn't trying to fit a particular genre structure. So throughout the whole of those films, he's able to, his little eccentricities and his, the things which make a Paul Verhoeven movie, a Paul Verhoeven film, are present throughout. But with this, the first hour, as we've been discussing it, that's where the first half is where the really good stuff is. It's where all, like, the ridiculous lines, all the inappropriate stuff is. The last half, it then almost feels like it's trying to become a more conventional horror slasher film, where things actually become a little bit more formulaic. There's a host of fairly uninspiring kills. It falls victim to all the classic cliches of those kind of genres, where you've got, you know, the final showdown recurring about three times at the end. And all those Verhoeven little touches are sort of lost in the last act, which it does lose its appeal. But I think, you know, I mean, we've had a good time talking about it, because the first half, some of the lines and some of the ridiculous events that unfold, they are just, there is classic Verhoeven in here, which makes it, which I find endears it to me. I'd say I do like it. It's an enjoyable watch.
I don't really think he's made a film in Hollywood since. I think he didn't make a film for six years. Then he made a Dutch film, went back to his native land, or Black Book.
I haven't seen that, but apparently it's good. It's a World War II, isn't it? Spy thing.
Yeah, apparently it's very good. Yeah. And then he made Elm.
Yeah, that was it.
Which is a real return to form. And then I believe he's got another one coming out next year, which sounds a bit dubious. I think it's about a lesbian nun.
Well, I think the best Verhoeven you're going to get is when he's sort of unrestrained. You know, he's not concerned about making back a big Hollywood budget. And I mean, this was the first, Hollow Man was the first film where there wasn't some kind of a tussle with the censors to cut it down to an acceptable age rating. Because really, it's his most tame film. And I think you can tell at moments that he is restrained. This isn't the sole vision of Paul Verhoeven. There's clearly other forces at work. So yeah, it does lose out, doesn't it, on certain things that would make it great. But yeah, I mean, would recommend it. Give it a watch.
Oh, absolutely. Enjoy. Well, just for the CGI, you know, I don't know if I've mentioned this, but the CGI.
Well, yeah, I mean, we you've mentioned it a few times. It's good CGI.
Oh, sorry.
It's very good CGI. In the 90s, it was every 2-3 years he was just knocking them out. He had RoboCop 87. He had Total Recall 90, Basic Instinct 2 years later, Showgirls in 95, and then Starship Troopers in 97. So it was an absolute...
Yeah, not a bad run.
For Paul in the 90s there.
I'd love to see him just try and come back just for one last hurrah in Hollywood, just to see out of interest what he could produce based on what we're living with today. Just to see how his general tone and how he makes films would come across.
I think Verhoeven and woke culture probably go together like lamb and tuna fish, if you were to use the Big Daddy, yeah. God. But no, yeah. No, I mean, I'm not entirely sure how compatible the woke culture in Verhoeven would be. I think Verhoeven would probably be even more stifled than he was here. But
we have grown an affection for the bacon since we kicked off with Tremors. So we'll have a look and we'll see what we can
see what we can share. Right. Bye.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. Bye bye.
You'll find me on social media, just trying to post sort of witty and humorous things. So all that and more can be found over at Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Film Vloggers. Cheers.
Hello and welcome to What's Our Seat Number. If you're listening to this trailer, you're deciding whether or not you're going to listen to this podcast.
Good.
But chances are we've lost you already.
Good. Wait, what? No, come on, Matt. What?
Well,
why?
I mean, it takes what, like 10 seconds for people
you're
to lose interest
defeatist.
In things?
You're
I am
being
not being defeatist.
Defeatist.
They've
you
gone
are.
Already. It's for now.
Well, now they are because we started arguing, so we've both sort of driven them out.
Well, go
right,
on then.
Go on
tell the dead air who we are.
Okay. The dead air. The cadaver.
The people who aren't listening anymore.
I'm taking control. You introduce yourself, and then I'll introduce myself, and then we'll talk a little bit about what we're doing, right? It's going right, to sound more right, professional right, that
okay,
way. Go.
Okay, okay. I'm Johnny Gross. I am a filmmaker and a film fan and fanatic and obsessive.
Good. Very good. That was very well done. Very professional. You sounded like you're in control and almost like you know who you are.
All right, then. And who are you?
I'm Sai. I'm a 3D artist and a game designer, a film fan. I'm your brother as well.
Really?
So we're going to be talking about some of our favorite movies and hopefully some of yours as well. There's going to be trivia behind the scenes.
Do you want to tell the listeners why we've called this podcast What's Our Seat Number?
You really came to the right person with fielding this question because I feel that I can take this story and really bring it to life. Okay, so one time we went to go and see a film in the cinema and I asked, what's our seat number?
Fantastic.
Was it good?
Yeah.
I did it for you.
It's great. If you want to hear more, you can check out the rest of our episodes. We're hosted by Podbean, but you can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music or Audible, TuneIn, Alexa, Listen Notes, and now on iHeartRadio, Player FM, and Podchaser. So pretty much wherever you get your podcasts. Please don't forget to review, like, and rate, and keep listening, because the more you listen, the more we'll be able to produce. Bye.
Ta-ta.